Live from Los Angeles, this is Batch Masters. I'm Craig, and with me, as always, is Chris.
Hey, Craig.
How's it going?
It's going very well. Happy to be here tonight on this dramatic recap of the Men Tell All, also a dramatic episode. I'm saying it's going to be dramatic because I think we're going to really get into it.
It's dramatic in ways that I think David Lynch and Chris Marker would probably not include in their filmmaking. Their dramatic techniques are a little different than the fast editing of reality television that is The Bachelorette.
A little bit, although I still think I'm yet to see anything as surreal from either Lynch or Marker as something in The Bachelorette, which is why I love it.
Well, yeah, the whole premise is surreal, and the fact that it's been on for, I don't know, 13 years or something ridiculous like that is surreal in itself.
You have more history with the show, but one thing that we'll see early in this episode is some of the best of clips of the past Men Tell All, and I was surprised to see an ultrasound performed on stage.
Oh, I know.
In the past.
Let's wheelbarrow this woman out to reveal whether or not her fetus has a penis or not. Actually, you know, now that you did mention the flashbacks, I think of all the things in this sort of thing we call the Men and Women Tell All, which is problematic, I think my favorite part, I don't remember this from past Men or Women Tell All, is this flashback best of thing that you just mentioned. I thought that was kind of neat to see some of the more interesting moments in the live shows.
Well, I thought it let me see Chris Harrison through time. Also, yeah, he's a little bit of a cyborg. He doesn't look too much different, but he looks a little older. You know what? I shouldn't say he looks older now, but he looks younger in the past. He looks more pristine, and that was a little bit odd to see.
Well, he's been through a divorce. He's written a steamy romance novel. He has stopped traveling for The Bachelorette, as we've come to learn. We don't know if that's actually true or not, but it seems to be the case. And fun tidbit of information for those not in L.A. and listening to us live from L.A. is they're actually at CBS Television right there in Mid-City, where Price is Right is filmed. It's kind of an iconic area right next to the Grove Shopping Center in Mid-City Los Angeles. And the reason they're at CBS is because the production company for The Bachelor, Bachelorette, which ABC purchases the show from, actually has an affiliation with the CBS studio. So it actually makes a lot of sense, though, because that whole CBS Television City thing is geared towards these live shows. So Craig Ferguson, The Price is Right, all these shows do their live shows there where they have live studio audiences, and the whole area is geared for bringing in live people. So you can't bring your cell phones into these things, and so across the street there's a whole economy of little thrift stores that have walls of rental safes that you can put. So you run across the street when they tell you you can't bring your phone and wallet in, or phone, I guess. Put your phone in there and all your other stuff, lock it up, pay, you know, some huge fee, run across the street again, and then get back in the queue to go get frisked in order to get on The Price is Right, or in this case, the Men Tell All.
Oh, see, that's interesting.
We're a wealth of information here on the Batch Masters.
Yeah, the economic relationships of the, yeah, that's, it is interesting that you've got these production studios that are different than the distribution and the networks that air the shows initially, that those often change hands afterwards. So I did not know that. I always thought it was ABC all the way.
It is not. I mean, I imagine it would have to be a Disney. I don't know where, I don't know, like, does ABC, the network, have studios? I think it's just Disney, which is right over by Warner Brothers, on over by you, not far from North Hollywood.
Good point. I guess I had never stopped to consider that, yeah, ABC does not have studios the way that Warner Brothers, Universal, etc. have.
So we're looking at the memorable moments right now, and there's Andy Dorfman, our favorite Bachelorette. And
in the blue dress, is that correct?
Is it blue? Yeah, like the sequined.
The sequined, yeah.
Dark,
that's
dark black hair. She was the Atlanta. She was a assistant district attorney, who. She's the woman that Nick outed on a live broadcast where he's like, "Why did you have sex with me if you didn't like me?" And it was like what basically took the elephant out of the room. You know, this being an ABC show and you can't talk about actual sex happening. But after Nick did that to Andy, that's when we started to be able to have discussions about sex happening in the fantasy suites. And Andy has gone on to not go back to her lawyer, public defender job, but she is an Instagram star. And I actually unfollowed her Instagram because it was so commercialized. It was like, yeah, at first it was cute. You know, she's a good-looking person. You follow her on Instagram. But then it was just like product after product after product. Ugh. So, well, which is, you know, what they do now. But she took it to a much more extreme level than some of these other Instagram stars.
It also explains why you unfollowed me on Instagram, which my Instagram is brought to you by Blue Apron. just putting a plug out there.
Well, that's funny because our friends over at the Rose Pricks Bachelor podcast. Actually, it's the one that Ronnie does, the Ronnie Karam does on the Bravo shows, the Watch What Crappens. They're sponsored by HelloFresh. So maybe we can get Blue Apron someday and see who can bring in more.
Blue Apron, if you're listening, we're not sponsored by you, but we love you. And thank you for
Do you
the
do the Blue
meals.
Apron? Do you do that?
In fact, that's what I just finished eating right now.
So they send you everything in, like, individual compartments, and then you follow the directions and have a fresh meal?
That's exactly right. There is no food or meal that tastes better than a meal made from scratch. Blue Apron. it's all fresh ingredients. Three, you know, if you have the standard two-person, three-meal plan per week, then you get lots of fresh ingredients, three recipes. Share it with someone that you like or don't like, you know, or maybe just give it to someone who really needs a meal. It's a great service, Blue Apron.
I think we're asking for a lot, Chris, that of our 13 listeners, one of them works in marketing for Blue Apron. But it could happen.
It could happen. Isn't and, you know, I do hear it's a high bar. I think once you know you've made it when Blue Apron sponsors your podcast or whatever. And I think we're maybe a little bit far from those metrics.
Well, I think isn't Amazon in that game too? Amazon Fresh. I mean, it's like a whole thing now. I live in here in I'm in East LA. I live in a sort of like a multi-unit factory conversion, and every day when I walk in the evening hours, there's like a whole row of HelloFresh Blue Apron boxes because it must be like date
so you're
night.
Sick of it.
Thursday nights or something.
Well, Amazon's about to launch a service that's similar. They do have their fresh grocery delivery service, but Blue Apron had their IPO recently, and their stock is doing terribly because Amazon announced they're going to launch something soon that they think is going to bury Blue Apron. So, needless to say, every startup that wants to make a little money is going to do something like this. And as per usual, you're probably right, Craig, that capitalism will ruin everything. And
wait, when did I say that?
I read between the lines. I'm only kidding. Okay. I'm only kidding.
Well, capitalism is, you know, putting money in banks and lending it out. That seems perfectly adequate to me. I tend to pick on the Braskins a lot, but do they have HelloFresh and Blue Apron and in like places other than large metropolises like Los Angeles? Because here in LA, we can literally get packages delivered in Amazon within a couple hours.
Yeah.
And that's true for everything. You can order alcohol from liquor stores. You can get any kind of food all on these apps. I don't know if that exists in other places that aren't like as well populated.
I take it for granted too, because I never think about it until I visit where I came from in upstate New York. And then I realize that you're right. Most places don't have that convenience. So I don't know.
We just saw all of the men introduced once again with their little taglines. And last night when I was watching this on ABC with my DVR, I actually rewinded a few times to try to get through it and kind of make a mental note. And what my takeaway was that everyone is a senior business analyst. That seemed to be like my everything blurred together, and I was like, wow, all 15 of them are senior business analysts, which isn't exactly true. Like, but you know, Dean isn't the only corporate recruiter.
I noticed that there was one of the people who speaks quite a bit in this episode is an executive recruiter also.
Yeah. So, you know, that was kind of interesting. And Dean's hair seems to be noteworthy. He's kind of got like this wave thing going on.
Hey, and he's looking pretty good on this episode, don't you think?
I think I said in our very first podcast that of all the guys that I probably think I look like, like, just sort of generally, if you squint your eyes, I think I'm probably fall into, like, the Deanish category. And I've always called him the guy with no upper lip, because he needs to go down. He lives in freaking Venice Beach. He should just go up to Beverly Hills and get his, you know, get fat. They take fat from your butt and inject it in your upper lip. It's a normal procedure. He needs to have that happen because his upper lip is just doing him no favors. But I've really grown soft on him. I don't think he's that dashing of a guy. I mean, it's partly because his personality has been very childish, but it's like, I don't know. If I were a girl, I probably would say I don't feel tingly down there. You know what I mean?
Well, you're more critical than I am, so I'm always I look forward to hearing your opinion. Yeah, out of the, you know, I like watching The Bachelorette even for objectifying men just as much as vice versa when it's Bachelor. So,
well, the usual disclaimer, you know, these are all adults; they've chosen to be on the show. They know that that's putting them up for critique, both about what they say and how they look and how they present themselves. We actually just saw a little flashback to DeMario and his meth-addled sort of
Lexi
booty call. And, you know, I think of all the people on this mental all that probably helped himself out, well, I think DeMario
was so funny.
He said some things that, like, if you were to pull them out as quotes, probably aren't good. But I think if you kind of view his whole thing at the end, he went on this sort of rant. I think you can say that he did himself a bunch of favors because he really confronted everything very straightforwardly. And he said, you know, he's like, what do you call a girl you only call after 5:30? You know, side chick or whatever.
Well, yeah, his defense of himself in the beginning of the episode is weak because he does talk this about the side chick, but Lee helps him out toward the end by being the villain,
right?
Definitely of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll get to Lee. General Lee. Let's just call him generally. I don't think he deserves
it. I like
it. Just call Lee. What I think we should try to get everything else out of the way before we get to Lee, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. But DeMario is funny because I think he loves that the attention is sort of taken off him.
Yeah.
And it cracks me up, his sort of arc in the episode.
Well, there was a moment where one of the guys sitting next to him was kind of laying into him. Like, DeMario was, I don't know, going on about something. And this guy next to him goes, you know, what are you talking about? You. And then he, like, cut himself off. I think he was going to mention the whole Corinne scandal, like you,
I was
sexually assaulted a girl or something like that, because it was so, like,
this was after that. As far as you understand, it was probably filmed.
Oh, you know, now that you mention it, that's a good point. I mean, that's a good point. That's something we should know. We are the Bachelor Masters. You would think we would that. You've caught me off guard. You're right. I think this was probably filmed before Bachelor in Paradise.
I you are a Bachelor Master. I am a Bachelor Master in training. I only ask.
You're a Bachelor Apprentice.
You know, I didn't realize Dean is on Bachelor in Paradise. They say that in this episode.
Well, there's that's what I was trying to remember when we were preparing for the show. Is the part I think I also liked was at the very end they did a little Bachelor in Paradise preview, or maybe it was on the ABC commercial break, but there was a preview at some point.
I saw that too. Okay. I watched it through the live service, so I saw commercials, and somehow I saw that as well.
And who provided that live service, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
Who's our unofficial other sponsor?
Well, we're also unofficially sponsored. We just love Hulu.
Yes.
It's only four letters to spell, easy to say, great service at a convenient price.
It is. You can just pull The Bachelor right up. And I've been watching Shameless, which I love, on Hulu.
I haven't seen that in a few years, but I used to love Shameless, too. In school, I did all of my spec writing for TV for Shameless.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, we talked last week about the fact that you're a trained screenwriter and the interesting insights that brings to Bachelor Masters. There's a preview for the Bachelor in Paradise, and they showed Dean making out with somebody. I didn't catch who. I couldn't really see the girl very well. It was like a shadow. But so, you know, whatever. He's rebounded. And interestingly enough, I caught on Instagram, someone put out a meme. There's a picture of him with some blonde woman that seems to be his girlfriend. And so the meme pointed out that when Dean did his little intro to Rachel at the end of last year's Mentel All, or whatever it was, after the Rose.
Right.
And they wheeled out a few guys in her to do a little preview. Dean said, "I want to go black and I'll never go back." Well,
yep.
He's back.
Dean, you shouldn't have said it on television.
Never say anything that you can't take back. That's, I think, the rule of television.
They play that clip again because I had forgotten that he was the one who said that. But as part of his bio on this episode, they played that clip.
Right. I just think, you know, the overall, I think we've mentioned this before. The group isn't all that great looking.
They're all kind of bland. When we were just talking about that, and especially after they showed the clips from the past.
Yeah.
I think there's some better looking guys in the past. And I think out of the final guys, I think we've agreed on this, that, you know, Eric, I think, is my favorite because he seems like a real, or I don't know, he seems interesting. If I were Rachel, I'd be going for Eric. But we're seeing all these guys. I forgot half of these guys. Did you remember them?
Well, we've gone on and on about how Rachel seems to like the kind of bland guy. You know, if you're interested in that whole hour-long conversation between Chris and I, that's on the No Dad in Dallas episode of our podcast. But
Very clever titles.
She likes the kind of bland dude, and these guys are all bland, which is why we don't remember a lot of them. Now, Andy Dorfman, you know, her guys, I mean, she's a bombshell. At the time, she was a lawyer. She's super hot. You know, like, her guys were, like, these gorgeous dudes. She had, like, pro baseball players, you know, and, like, you know, guys who were, like, doing all this, making all this money, and, like, you know, trading stocks and stuff like that. So I think it's just sort of the ebb and flow of the girls. Like, JoJo had a good-looking crop. They must, I'm sure, interview, get a really good sense of what kind of guys they like. But the point I think I'm trying to make is that Dean, well, kind of holds his own in this group. But really, if you put him up against, like, a more high-octane group,
He's just
not there. I mean, he just doesn't do it for me.
It's a good point because the Mentel All does not have any of the top three to preserve the suspense. And so Dean is sort of the top-seeded guy.
He's sort of like what everyone in the audience is kind of gripping onto, right? Because he's so cute and, you know, has the dramatic story. But, I mean, really none of the guys are like jumping out of the screen as like a big loss to any girl.
I would agree with that. I think Dean, you know, he's young. I think he could develop, but I agree that even in the little bit of the show I've seen so far, he is a little bit of a lightweight, but he had a great hometown.
Well, so we're listening to Wah Boom here, and
oh my goodness.
So Wah Boom kind of flamed out when we got totally wasted that one night, and then they had a big argument, and then that was it for him. And I made the comment that he's actually better looking when he's sloppy junk than when he's not sloppy junk. And actually what I realized watching this, cause he's not sloppy drunk in this, is that it's just when he loses his stupid act that he's actually a kind of cool, sincere, good looking dude.
Yeah.
Like if he's not wah booming, he's just he probably could have done really well, and he probably could do really well. I don't know why he needs the act. He seems like a pretty straightforward dude.
I don't know where that came from, but I'm still, I think we talked about this back when he was on the show. I'm still convinced he's in cahoots with, I think his name is Will, the right. dude that he has, he kind of like trumped up conflict with. It feels so choreographed.
Right. Is Will here? Where is Will? Do we know Will?
He's, well, if I get his name wrong, I'm sorry, but yeah, he's here. He's the guy that Waboom and him kind of have it out on the stage again, where they say, oh, you guys sort of both sabotage one another. He's the guy that fought with him that night that he got eliminated first, right. and he kind of blames Waboom. Yeah.
Well, it must have been one of the many times I almost fell asleep while watching this, that because I don't remember that at all.
Well, he has no presence other than this one moment early on. And Waboom, I got to say, is very top heavy in this episode and kind of disappears, you know? He's right. gone very quickly.
Well, it's funny. Speaking of top heavy, they put all the short guys in the bottom row and the tall guys in the top rows. I'm surprised the bleachers they rolled in don't tip over. Okay, so we got pro wrestler guy. He's doing Kenny. His thing, and he rolls out his daughter.
Yeah,
he seems like a really nice. She seems, you know, very well raised. She's very pretty.
Yeah,
he hands her a rose, and that kind of lit up Twitter for obvious reasons. I mean, believe it or not, there is room for just normal, sincere human moments on the series. It's just like the thing that clouded it for me is, like, I think the argument that most people have against him is that that's all he talked about was his daughter. So it's like,
okay,
now that we actually see her, it's like, okay, great. You know, if it had been more like, okay, we knew he had a daughter, but that was it. Like, I think it would have been more of like a cool moment. But the fact that that's all he talked about, and he was showing pictures to Rachel every time he saw her, that's kind of like, all right, let's get this over with.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because I as I've mentioned in the past, I don't necessarily follow the conversation around the show as much as you, but that's my feeling. I like Kenny a lot, but he talks about his daughter so much, and I'm also just kind of a terrible person that I just don't care about, you know, I care about you know, certain people's children, certain babies, but for the most part I don't care. And
yeah, you know, I'm kind of with you. I think you and I have a similar disposition when it comes to that. But you know, we're not most of the demographic, I suppose.
That's true. Yes, I mean, obviously.
I mean, there's the people that listen to podcasts and get kind of obsessive about it, and then, like myself, and then there's like the people who like seeing people fight. That's also me. But you know, I think there's a large, most probably the majority of people just, you know, they're not thinking about those like fringe aspects of it, and they're just kind of going straight in as like a human drama. I guess. And so they do like seeing daughters and hearing about daughters and families, and like kind of that's what television, primetime television, is, I guess, for people like that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I had a rare moment, and this might seem a little ironic, but usually I see the show on my own, not with I do have a girlfriend who is the person who got me into this whole universe to begin with. And again, got me into it in a way that I like it. Not ironically, I just think it's, I really just I like it enough to watch it on my own. But this last night, I had the rare treat of watching with her, because she's working from home this week. And one thing we both said that we joked about was that we think it was Kenny's daughter. You know, they should have called out that she was the fact that she was the reason that Kenny got booted from the show. That she, uh-huh. Rachel should have turned to her and said, oh, you're so cute, you're beautiful, and don't you know, you're the reason that your daddy will never right. find love, or something like that.
Well, that and the fact that he's a pro wrestler that lives in Las Vegas. Although I imagine
That's true.
If The Bachelor is sort of a boiler room, right? You put all these people. I think Vegas is like that, too. I mean, everyone that lives in Vegas is, you know, lives in Vegas. They all know what they're doing there, and they all work in you know, whether you're a dealer or a food server or a pro wrestler, you essentially work in entertainment.
Right.
So it's like, I imagine it's actually probably easy to date other people who are in Las Vegas.
I would think so too.
Well, that's what I get out of that bubble, then it becomes very odd to people.
Because Kenny seems very, you know, everyone has an act on the show, and right. I don't, you know, that's the game. If you or I were on it, we would have an act also. But Kenny seems very wholesome. But I've often wondered, yeah, what's he like in his quote normal life, or you know what? Because I don't. Sometimes I think he might be one of the people that's a little, you know, most different from who he is on the show, just
right.
because of what you said, like Vegas wrestler kind of guy.
Well, he raised his daughter well, from what we can tell. You know.
Yeah, definitely.
We are the Bachelor Masters. We try to bring a certain intellectual spin to our podcasts. Chris and I are both educated in the fine craft of media making. And part of that education comes a learned approach to copyright. And the idea that copyright has been completely bastardized by corporations over the years. So copyright now is up to 90-something years. So
oh, really?
It follows the length of it follows Mickey Mouse. So Mickey Mouse is copyrighted, you know, way back at the turn of the century, and every time that the copyright is set to expire, Disney pays some congressperson to introduce a bill to extend copyright. And so the last copyright extension was the Sonny Bono Copyright Extension Act, which extends copyright to 90 something years. And the reason that's a problem is because humans don't live that long. So
right.
basically, it just reinforces this whole notion that corporations are people, but corporations can live on past the human lifespan, which is why they shouldn't be considered people, in my opinion. But
yeah.
that's a whole other story. But the whole, really, we can blame Disney for this ridiculous length of copyright, which means that no works in our lifetime, certainly not, but also in our grandparents' lifetime, is in the public domain and can be used for things other than making money. Okay, you with me so far?
I'm with you.
Okay.
And so is the audience.
So maybe people in our podcast are big Disney fans. I don't know. I wish we could get more feedback on who our listeners are, but the podcasting framework doesn't really provide that. But so bear with me if you're wearing a I Heart Mickey shirt right now, or you're like staying in the hotel and you're ready to go to California Adventure in the morning.
Or ironically, watching The Bachelor on ABC,
right.
owned by
Correct.
Disney.
Correct. Exactly. That's the irony here. So, obviously, they gave the girl and pro wrestler guy a trip to Disneyland tomorrow, right? That was
mm-hmm.
the big thing. Of course they
That's
did,
right.
because Disney owns ABC. That's
yeah.
obviously no problem there. But any time I hear Disney, it's like, oh, they're the family network, and they make all these amazing movies that kids love, and blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, and they also, like, bribed Congress to extend copyright so that, you know, you still have to buy the Mickey Mouse ears as opposed to just making them out of cardboard and wearing them. You know, it's like every day a doctor's office in America gets a cease and desist letter from Disney to paint over the walls in their waiting room because they have Goofy on the walls. This is the corporation, the beloved corporation known as Disney. So, anyway.
See, you're always opening eyes. My eyes, the listener's eyes. I remember,
Did we not talk about this?
We
I
did
we
talk
about
this.
This.
It's been
yes.
a little while, but I do remember this. But I think it's interesting, and I think you have a good point. But, yes, we are seeing a lot of Kenny. Are
Chris
you watching
changes
Kenny
the
right
subject.
Now?
Well, they're having fun in Disneyland or had fun in Disneyland, and I'm sure copyright did not come up. Although copyright, because of the copyright, Disney is making just hand over fist amount of money. And
I mean, Disney is difficult because, you know, I think you've got a really great mind for coming at things kind of in a, you know, like a social justice and sociological kind of way.
Yeah.
And for a lot of things, you know, a lot of times I'll approach things just by their aesthetic. And
sure.
But I'm also not, you know, sometimes I feel pretty alienated because I think I don't understand what a lot of people get excited because they have a common taste for a certain thing. And I we talked about this a little bit last week, actually, maybe off air. But, you know, we can feel alienated if it's like, I wish I understood what everyone loved.
Right.
But that's my feeling for Disney is even the, like a lot of the classics and whatnot, the most I can muster is like ambivalence. It's never
right.
maybe complete hatred, but it always does feel also like it's very sanitized.
Yeah.
So that's my personal feeling. Again, I have no ill. I know a lot of people, you know, I went to a school where lots of people love Disney and go and work for Disney, but I'm kind of with you there, Craig.
That well, it's just, the whole, like, we can't talk about sex on our networks, yet all of the Disney Channel young girls on that show are sexualized. I mean, we could just go on and on. But
yeah, exactly.
We should get back to Kenny. I know you had some more things to say about him. And you
well, Kenny's the star
him.
Of the show, isn't he? He's in the hot seat right now, I believe. Yeah, I'm seeing him in the hot
well,
seat.
Well, I think
Chris
they're about to
Harrison.
Roll out his daughter here, aren't they?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, exactly. This is going to be the surprise. So,
and you guys are going to Disneyland tomorrow. You know what's funny is that they didn't. So Chris Harrison says they're going to Disneyland tomorrow, but never says he doesn't give any details. I mean, it's not like, you know, like the Price is Right or Wheel of Fortune when they're like and they cut to like the airplane.
Yeah, exactly.
And like you're gonna have 3 nights staying at the luxurious Disneyland resort and casino or something. You know, it's like he just goes, you're going to Disneyland tomorrow. And then there's like this awkward like
they say
we are? Yeah. How are well, we getting there? Where are we staying? Do we get like script for to buy our lunch?
Kenny's daughter seems like a great performer. I do. I
yeah,
agree
she
with
was
you.
Like, oh my
she,
God.
She acts all the beats that she's supposed to, but
yeah.
in a way that I felt like there's no way someone her age organically acted this way. She's putting on the show, but she's doing great. Like, I thought she was really endearing, but there's no way. She's a little old to be getting as excited as she has to, like, broadcast she's about
well,
Disneyland.
Well, I'm sure Kenny, like, sat her down before the show and said, now, if Chris Harrison promises us a day trip to Disneyland, act surprised. And...
exactly.
But it's like he could have – Chris Harrison told – like, he could have said something else. Like, we'll cover all your expenses or, you know, like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
ABC's putting you up. It's like – it was just like you're going to Disneyland, awkward – cut to commercial or whatever it was.
Oh yeah, no, he says you're going to Disneyland, they cut to commercial and he says God help you right after
yeah, right.
already cut.
You're going
you know,
into
quick,
hell.
Quick tangent while we're talking about that one last quick one, but one of my favorite more like film concepts maybe than it was an execution of the last I don't know like 5 or 6 years. Did you ever see that movie Escape from Tomorrowland?
No. With George Clooney?
No, that has a that I think that's just Tomorrowland. This is an indie film that was shot illegally in I want to say Disney World in Florida.
Oh, yes, I've heard of this. I've not seen it. So
it's
you're right.
Of,
Tomorrowland is the big production, but Escape
yes.
from Tomorrowland is this like
it's sort of this horror film about this
yeah.
family that has this Disney vacation, but things start to go increasingly wrong. And I really like the idea. The film itself kind of underwhelmed me a little bit, but I still have a soft spot in my heart because it's such a good idea. It's fun. It's such a good idea. And they filmed it all without permits.
Yeah,
illegally.
They just like showed up and they would just pull out the cameras real quick and film a scene and then
I
put them
love
away.
That. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what
I was in high school,
like.
we used to make these funny videos and we used to do the same thing at airports. But this, you know, before 9/11, you could just go through security and do whatever you wanted in airports. But that takes a lot of intestinal fortitude to do that at Disneyland because
oh my goodness
you know that
sure.
they have undercover media you know Gestapo just waiting to tackle someone who looks like they're doing an unpermitted film shoot.
Well, I think they had a few incidents like that and then it even went up to their they premiered at Sundance and
oh, right.
you know Disney was all over them there, but I think they had gotten enough kind of publicity by that point
sure.
that Disney didn't want to seem like the bag. They thought, like, we're not going to draw any more publicity to this film,
right.
so they didn't block its distribution. But that's what I imagine Kenny and his daughter's trip was like Escape from Tomorrowland.
So is that on Hulu, Chris?
That's a good question. I should know, but it has been in the past. I don't think it is right now, though.
Well, I know at the last Sundance, that wasn't that long ago, Netflix like literally bought every film.
It's the big controversy in the film scene world at Cannes this last year, too. There was booing whenever the Netflix logo came up for some of the big movies.
It's because, like, it messes up the whole award show seasons. Like there's like the academies don't, or the Academy doesn't want to like bend to like having to give Academy Awards to Netflix properties and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Because then where does it end, Craig? Right. Where does it end? Where the Bachelor end? Masters, are they going to have to start awarding you podcasts?
Well, I'm sure they must have podcast.
I think they awards. Do. Yeah,
but you know, there's really only one real way to make money. Well, that's not true. There's really just two ways to make money doing podcasting. The first is you have to be around for a very long time and build up your listenership. So the Rose Pricks podcast has something like 80,000 listens, which is a lot. So you can go to something like HelloFresh and say, you know, we have this listenership and at least get some money from it. But the real way is you have to become part of a network. So there's only a few of these, like these national podcasting networks that have, you know, hundreds of properties. And the YouTube stars are all part of these networks too, right? So it's not just an, it's like, how did this guy, this 15-year-old who jumps off, you know, Bizardvark or whatever, how does he get a million views on his YouTube video? Well, he's part of a network.
And yeah.
The networks just have it all figured out and they know how to get them out there and blast it to zillions of social media accounts using robots and stuff. So we're never going to become part of a network. I don't imagine.
I would be surprised myself, Craig. But
so we just have to go from 13 to 80,000, and then we can go down the street and approach Amazon Fresh in order to get some sponsorship.
Well, I think at that point, Craig, we'll approach Amazon Fresh to beg for our lives, because it means that they have taken over. And at that point, we will have gotten a listenership, and the prize is you get to live.
Right.
So it's like I also see this as an insurance policy.
It's like the Costco in that movie, Idiocracy.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, so good. I love that. I saw that recently. That it's you know, I gotta say, another thing, quick tangent, quick film review here. That movie, I know it got a big boost during the Trump campaign, and you know, people trying to say like, okay, that was, it was a little bit ahead of its time. It's not, I don't think it's a great film, and I know it had a very troubled release, and I think it was very famously sort of the studio and Mike Judge battled back and forth, so it feels very kind of compromised, and I think it ends very weakly. But there were a few moments that are so funny. The Terry Crews president in that movie is hilarious. And there are a few lines like the Gatorade, everyone, you know, it's what plants crave.
Right. Right.
So good.
I mean, it sort of fits into that Mike Judge, like the guys from South Park, what are they called?
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
It fits into that sort of level of irony where it's more funny it's like funny when you think back on it. And
yeah.
Like in your mind puts everything together and you're like, oh man, that's really funny and ironic. But when you're actually watching it, it's like not quite laugh out loud funny.
Yeah, I think, you know? I'd agree with that too.
And good good irony is hard to do on a
So hard, because I think I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, Craig, but the line between great irony and like all out like cynicism, or maybe it's very thin. Like I love Trey Parker and Matt Stone sometimes, but it's sort of like I have to leave any like political preconceptions or anything at the door, because I think you just have to be ready to laugh at anything, because sometimes I think they're pretty, it's hard to sometimes see what their take is on an issue by design, but sometimes it can be like, well, I don't necessarily agree with this satire, but, and that's in Idiocracy, it's the same thing. There's some things where it's like, oh man, does this just have contempt for like all poor people or, you know, anyone who is not quote average? I'm always like a little skeptical, but at the same time, there's like some moments that I can't help but like laugh really hard at. So I have to turn my brain off a little bit.
It's a great read. Well, I'll throw one more in the Demolition Man with Wesley Snipes.
See, I've not seen
he wakes up in the future. And everything is, there's only one company in the world, and it's Taco Bell. Like, everything is Taco Bell. So, like, fine dining is Taco Bell. You know, like, 7-Eleven is Taco Bell. Every product is Taco Bell.
That sounds awesome.
But it's sort of, it's like this, like, non-ironic action movie, which is really kind of brilliant, I think.
Adding it to my Netflix queue. See, we're brought to you by Hulu, but we still use Netflix.
So our guy General Lee is on the hot stand. Now this happened, he got up on the couch. I mean, we're not even halfway through the show.
Yeah.
So he's on for a very,
very long time.
I mean, it's like three segments worth almost, I think.
Think so, because the very last segment is Rachel, but I think until then it's General Lee here.
Right, and that's right, because Rachel also lays into him a little bit, so it makes him seem even longer.
Right, exactly. She sort of spends a little time while he's in the audience. But you know what? It's funny, Kenny being a pro wrestler, one thing I thought of here, and I wonder, you might know a little more about this too, it is almost like whether they talked about this or it just happened organically, everyone kind of has their role in the way that, you know, you hear in wrestling matches, sort of it's like choreographed in a way that and that's what I felt. It's like Lee is going to be like the guy that falls on his racist sword and a lot of people get to kind of be hero, but it feels a little like too easy or something. Like, I don't know if you've been around, you know, I'm sure you have like uncomfortable conversations like this in real life where someone's put on the spot and, I think, like, Lee, I don't know if there's been comment on the internet about this, too, but it's, like, his sort of, the way that he has no fight in him right away is, like, a very easy out for a guy like this, I think. And it just allows a lot of people to kind of look good to dig into him, I thought. Like, DeMario and Dean also jumps on that.
Well, let's deconstruct this a little bit, because General Lee brings... He's unlike most anyone else that's been on the series. And so here's why I think why. So most people go on the show act like an idiot, and then they have to do damage control.
So, right.
Like DeMario, classic example. Does, you know, whatever. Stupid things happen. He tries, and then he hires a publicist, and I've mentioned this before. It's like there's companies that are, there's people out there that specialize in reality star publicizing. So it's like it's not like they're paying $100,000 and getting, you know, one-on-one time with the publicist. The publicist probably has hundreds of reality stars.
Right.
And then, you know, they give them a few minutes of their time. And they tell someone like DeMario, you know, here's what I think you should do when you're on the mental all. This is how you're going to resurrect your image. And of course, you know, when you watch Bachelor in Paradise, you can see a lot of that because they all have publicists when they go on that show, because it's very much about like rebranding your image based on what you had before. So to me, General Lee is a bit of an outlier because he went on the show wanting to cause a stink, but he wasn't a plant, right? So he wasn't Waboom where he's like trying to sell his brand.
Right.
It was like General Lee. It's like almost like he was in a game of truth or dare or something. It got dared to do it. Like, he's not trying to sell a product. He's not trying to sell a brand. I mean, yeah, he's a singer-songwriter, so whatever. He's probably trying to, like, become more popular that way. But it's not quite the same thing to me. It's like he knew he had these... Oh, here we go. It's like the real world used to be. You know, they used to cast these people in the early seasons of the real world that knew they had prejudices. And that was kind of why they went on the show.
Right.
So they'd have, like, the gay guy living with the Southern woman, Southern belle, who's really against gays and gay marriage and all that. And they knew it. They knew they were going into this thing. It's like MTV didn't hide it from them. Like, you're going to be living with a gay or a transgender, and you are going to be living with someone who is uncomfortable about around gays. Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that, to me, I think, well, MTV, in terms of what they've done for documentary reality TV, is unprecedented. I mean, they were right there at the beginning. They still do Teen Mom and 16 and Pregnant. They do all the, like, they really are upfront with what they're trying to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
In ways that things like these primetime network shows don't, they get softened by the network executives, I think. So they don't confront those issues face on. So I feel like maybe Lee, General Lee, thought he could go into this like it was an early season of The Real World.
So he's 10 or 12 years too late, basically.
Well, he's like, I'm going to go on the show knowing I'm going to get myself into a mix. I don't mind being the bad guy. The dudes tonight are probably right that he doesn't consider anything he says racist, and he thinks he's not racist.
Even. Right.
But it's so embedded in him that it's invisible. I think that was a really right on statement. So it's like he goes in, he knows he's going to be the bad guy, and then he talks to the publicist or whatever coming on here, and the publicist is like, do this, do that. But he doesn't really have an image to recover because he didn't do anything he didn't intend to do on the show to begin with.
Yeah.
It's like he's okay coming out as this, like, not quite evil sort of representative of certain parts of the South, sort of Trump era white dude.
Yeah, it's a really, what you're saying is a really good point, and it's making me think, it's a lot more complex than maybe I'd thought last night while I was watching it. Because you're right, he never really behaves badly on the show. I mean, he gets into conflict with people, but the most ugly things are backgrounds that they're pulling from his Twitter that's very difficult. And, sort of the kind of what you're pointing to also, I think, is one of the big things we deal with in, like, 2017 America, when you've got people that want to insist that we're in, like, a post-racist or post-racial society. Right. And someone who's convinced of that, it's very difficult to try and point to things like, well, no, we're not. And Lee has that kind of ingrained racial view that I think you're right, that there's the one gentleman who has the comment about being invisible to him, and that's the big thing. And but that's really hard to both point out or to recover from. I agree. Right. But that, I guess, that is what makes it interesting. He can do nothing but react in the episode, though, to all of this stuff. That's sort of like his main posture, is to, like, I'm going to react, I'm going to absorb all this.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right, and that's probably, whether it was him or a publicist, that's, as you pointed out, his strategy is to just sort of sit there and take it.
Right.
And whatever, that's probably the strategy. I mean, what else, that is, it's the strategy.
For someone who probably does have the views right. that... Right. Which I'm surmising a lot, but it does seem, I agree with it. It's like, that's all you can do, because you're probably not even aware of the way is that you're biased.
Well, I don't want to stereotype, whoever his, I don't know who his friends are or what community he lives in Nashville or whatever, but I imagine he'll go home and be a hero, right?
Like, yeah.
He'll go to his little town and country bar where he plays guitar, and I'm like, oh yeah, man, you showed them, it's like, screw them, which is, whatever. It's part of America. We all have our different communities and support networks, and that's kind of the reality. I feel like, though, the main complicating factor, like, everything we just said, I think, would have been all fine and dandy if it weren't for the tweets. Like,
you mean the tweets that they read, his tweets?
Yeah. Like, we could put the button on it right now if it weren't for the tweets. But we have to talk about, because the tweets completely change well, not completely, but they transform the conversation from something like naivety, from naive General Lee comes from this and that, to suddenly like, no, he's like a real fucking horror show who needs to be put in his place. Because that tweet about the NAACP being like the KKK is so completely wrong. I mean, maybe he thought he was talking about Black Lives Matter, which by shutting down freeways and disrupting commutes could in some very limited way be associated with non-violent protest, like sort of like violent protest. Uh-huh. And I think during the Trump stuff, that was communicated by white people is like, well, how is Black Lives Matter not a violent protest group or whatever? And does that have, you know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Maybe Lee generally thought he was talking about Black Lives Matter when he wrote NAACP in his tweet.
Yeah. But I was really confused by that, so I'm glad you're speculating through this.
I mean, there's various leaders of the NAACP and various branches that have done more aggressive things than others, but for Christ's sakes, they're the organization that
well
led to, like, community organized every movement of social justice that has happened in America since Robert Abraham Lincoln. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
No, absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I guess you can't take anything for granted if you have someone like General Lee who thinks this is funny. So I guess, you know, it's good that we both come out and say, yeah, absolutely, that's ridiculous and stupid. And, you know, you're dealing with, again, like predominant powers, the predominant, like, ruling class and the KKK terrorizing minority groups with, even if he was conflating Black Lives Matter or anything, a minority group, you know, that's been a any sort of violence or whatever out of it. It's just, it doesn't equate whatsoever. So I think you're right. That's worth saying. But I wondered, he said at some point that that's like half a tweet. Do you know what he's talking about that they didn't show?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. I was wondering, like, I don't think it would know it, just knowing what little I know about him, I doubt that the context.
Well, maybe he tweeted another tweet right after or something. And he thinks they go together.
Because I think he thinks it's some sort of like edgy racial joke, but I didn't understand what the, even if it was like a tasteless joke, I didn't really, that's where I was so confused, because I agree. I was like, the NAACP is like pretty clearly, you know, it's, it just didn't seem to equate to the KKK in any way.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I mean, I understand there's, you know, we're at this nexus of history in our country. You know, it's like people are really trying to figure this out. And there's a segment of white people that really truly feel like they're being left behind or left out or, you know, don't care about things like drone strikes or, you know, like, you know, like political correctness and all that stuff like that. Like, I get, those conversations need to happen, and Black Lives Matter presents a threat to that thinking. Like, I get that. I don't agree with it, but I get it. Like, I'm not going to, like, complete, you know, I get that there's, like, people come out of that. And I really appreciate that ABC allows that conversation to go on longer than any of the news networks have ever let that conversation go on. Like, Fox News would have cut that off after a minute, right?
Well, I agree with that this is, again, I'm glad that we just happened to start this podcast on a season that I think is really interesting for more than just the regular reasons. But yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's all I had to say. It's just like, I think the progressive liberals, right, that have been maybe on the front of these conversations for a long time, are probably saying like, when is it gonna turn? You know, when are we gonna be able, like, when can we just watch The Bachelor? You know, it's because like, why do we keep having to have these conversations? And then I understand the, you know, maybe the social conservatives are like, why does everything have to, you know, why does race even have to come up? You know, it's like in America cannot talk about these things in general without it becoming this, like, we've never been able to talk about these things. It's unfortunate.
Right.
So, you know, credit to ABC to, you know, maybe the producer, I don't know. I doubt they think this complexly, but maybe the producers thought by putting Lee on that it could lead to sort of this hot topic coming up and being discussed on podcasts and in water cooler conversations.
Right.
I think maybe that's thinking that the producers have more freedom and collective, like corporate bureaucratic consciousness right. is working more than it probably is. But.
Well, yeah, I know even less about the circumstances of the show and just than you do, and just only you know, make very loose speculation, but I would agree on the little that I know. But that's one of the things, is my perception of the show that makes it even more interesting, is that you do, and I think we have mentioned this a little before too, there is kind of like the overall tone of the show ends up feeling kind of like apolitical, because it is through this whole corporate machinery. And like you said, it's like attitudes about sex and some right. of the things it's presenting. There's this like paradox where it feels strangely like puritanical, even though there's this other like salacious side that a lot of people tune in for, even though it's kind of hidden. But I think that to have something like race, especially post, you know, the really dramatic election year where a lot of these issues have been pushed to the fore again, it's like it makes it more interesting in some ways than if it were someone who were like very earnestly trying to probe these issues, for me a little bit, because you know lots of a broad audience is tuning in, like you said, right. and a lot of people are, whether consciously or not, being forced to think about these things, and I think that's kind of cool.
Well, speaking of race, so now we're getting flashbacks to Dean's encounter with his father, who
I'm glad we're synced up, because that's what I'm saying too.
It's like, I'm going to become a Hindu and then completely disrespect the
Yeah, speaking movement. Of talking about representing different cultures or races, here we go, straight to Dean's father.
Yeah, who just makes a mockery of the whole thing. And, you know, Dean addresses the whole, like, you led me on, and you said you loved me or were falling in love with me, and then you dropped me, and you know, I think we've given Dean plenty of lip service in past podcasts to say that there's a lot of flaws in his character, whether it's being young, acting young, having a wave in his hair, but, you know, it's like he's character. Just not at a stage in his life where it's just going to work out. So
right.
But he seems, you know, to his credit, he seems to be handling rejection very well. I mean, I think one thing I don't think I've said before is that, something I think about a lot is your image really comes down to that limo ride after you've been cut. Right.
That is a great point.
You're in there, you're emotional. You, not only is this love interest ending, but you know, your time on reality television is potentially ending.
Craig, and you, that is a great philosophical statement on life, by the way. I love that. Sorry, but you
Wait, what do you love? Wait, say it back to me.
That it's your image is really all about that limo ride, oh. right? After you've been rejected. I know that I just rephrased it and maybe misquoted you a little bit.
The great limo ride in the sky.
Because everyone, you know, you're just waiting to fail in life, you know, like, yeah. even if you have some success or whatever, all success is fleeting, and you gotta deal with failure.
This is gonna be a David Lynch movie.
anyway.
The limo ride.
Good point.
Well, so not only are you in this limo, your emotional, your reality shows, but you have a producer who's in your face trying to get you to say a bunch of shit, right? Like,
yeah.
And so it takes a huge amount of self-restraint to not come across completely neurotic
yeah.
in the limo. And people have varying levels of success. It's like, what works, what doesn't work? Well, crying probably works. Yelling and saying what a bitch or asshole doesn't work.
Right.
You really don't want to criticize The best thing you could do is show a tear and say, I really hope for the best for her, and I hope she finds love. I learned from the experience, blah, blah, blah.
Right, that is pretty common. Or people who kind of, like, laugh and say, like, that's the minority, I think. Right. But don't you think there's some people who say, oh, it was a great ride, you know, I feel like I learned a lot.
But there are the people that just can't self-restrain. They say, God, you know, God, I can't believe her. Why would you do that?
Yeah. You know? Yeah,
that happens, especially on Bachelor in Paradise, because they're all wasted, you know, when they get cut. So they are. They've been drinking all day. And the thing always happens at night after a long, hot day.
Right. They're on the way to the hospital for some sort of organ transplant.
And there's been a couple times where, like, they've turned they've had the limo turn around and come back because it's like, I'm not ready to let you go or something.
Really? I cannot wait for this summer then, Craig.
The rules kind of break down on Bachelor. But the anyway, I think Dean, you know, to his credit, given the perception that maybe he has some childlike tendencies, he seems very mature in the way he handled the limo ride and, you know, subsequent social media. And then here he is on Mental All, sort of feeling very buttoned down. Yeah. I mean, he's obviously a very intelligent dude who
probably took
coaching very well, you know.
I think, like, he's going to be just fine. That's what I got from this as well. Is he does seem most mature here when he's able to. I could see it. I don't know how successful he is in his career, but if he's a successful startup recruiter, he seems to public speak very well. He's very eloquent. Like, when he's put on the spot like this, maybe he's a little more mature seeming than in these, like, one-on-one interactions. Yeah. And yeah, he seems good. He did mention at one point, I think during the hometown or something, that he's 26, but they always Chiron him as 25. So I think they're trying to play that he's like the baby, you know?
That's funny.
Yeah.
Other podcasts are, like, obsessed with the Chirons and the things that the producers do. My favorite being one I've mentioned before, which is when Elizabeth, who was on last season, she was the one that had sex with Nick before, you know, at the wedding before the show ever started.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And her Chiron was Elizabeth, and then after Elizabeth, in parentheses, it said Liz. So the Rose Tricks podcast started calling her Elizaliz. That was the funniest thing.
Elizaliz, yeah.
Elizaliz, yeah. Anyway, so just to put the button on Dean here, I think I would be very disappointed if Dean became the next Bachelor. I don't think –
He's not going to do it. He's not going to be the next Bachelor.
It's bad enough that they've come to choose the next Bachelor, Bachelorette from the previous pool.
Right.
Like, I wish we could maybe get, like, hit the reset button, start with someone totally fresh.
Yeah.
Somebody – you've heard me gripe about – Bachelor, Bachelorettes not being Bachelor, Bachelorettes, Caitlyn, you know, she had nothing going on in her, like, she doesn't have a career.
Right.
Young. I mean, that to me just isn't a Bachelorette. Like, it's Bachelors, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if they kind of hit the reset button and brought in a Bachelor who's a real Bachelor. Like, go out and get someone like Mark Cuban or, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So...
Rachel is a good, actually, and you said this before, too. She's a good, she does qualify, yeah. I think.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I just, Dean's not there for me yet. He's too popular. It's like all the girls would go goo-goo gaga because he's so cute. But he just doesn't have that, like, manly edge that I would personally respond more better towards.
Yeah, I think Peter will be the next Bachelor. What do you think?
That's been proposed. I honestly think they're gonna put him through the whatever they do, the screenings, and I think he's just not gonna. I think they're gonna find out that he's just not interesting.
It's like he maybe he didn't like Pocahontas or Mulan, and Disney will object and say, "Listen, you've got to be able to market all of our films properly." No, I'm kidding. But yeah, you have a good perspective on these things. I guess the only thing for Peter, well, we talked last week. It seems like maybe he might be angling for it because he's doing the whole I don't know if I want to propose kind of thing. Right. And he's also, yeah, I'm just not qualified to speculate. I just have a gut feeling, an unqualified gut feeling.
That's going to be Peter.
But Dean, well, he seems a little too, I don't know what the right word would be, because he's so young. And yeah, well,
let him go do his Instagram thing.
He's got to, like, yeah, he's got to get something out of his system, because he definitely seems like his next, like, he'll be successful, I think, in what he decides to do, but it'll be like therapy. It'll be like some kind of success he realizes is empty a little bit later. But I think he's going to be okay.
Well, I was just, I could be way off base here, but I was reading something that they're going to come out with. So typically with these Disney movies, right, they come out in the theater, they're a huge success, and then they come out with sequels, but they're direct-to-video sequels.
Oh yeah,
like they don't come out in the theater. They're just marketed towards kids.
And I remember
they're
those. Not yeah,
high quality. Well, apparently Robin Williams, right, who was in Aladdin as the
genie.
Right. Yeah, the genie.
The big blue guy. Yeah.
I guess he didn't want to be part of these like made for TV sequels or whatever, but I guess he recorded like all this dialogue before he died. He didn't know he was gonna die, but I guess he recorded this whole like swath of material in the event that they decide to make a theatrical sequel. And I guess they're gonna move forward.
Oh my goodness, that is so bizarre to me.
I could be making this up, but I swear I heard that's what
I know. I wonder if it's for they're doing a live action. You know how Disney's new thing is to make live action versions of all of their hit animated films.
Is that so? That wasn't just a single thing with the Beauty and the Beast.
Oh no! Well, they've also done Cinderella as live action, Jungle Book. So yeah, they're doing Aladdin, and it's got a really big director attached to it. I'm sure
maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe they're going to use Robin Williams' voice for that.
That would be so bizarre, wouldn't it? It would feel a little weird.
Well, I guess with Star Wars, James Earl Jones, who's still alive,
and voiced
Darth Vader in Rogue One, I guess they actually sat him down and, like, this I know is true. And there's apparently a set of words and syllables and stuff that if you say them all into a microphone, then electronically you can piece together any word or sentence.
Right.
Like some, you know, I don't know who did this. Linguists must do this. But, like, he's done that. So they can make Darth Vader movies into the Infidium.
Which
even after
I'm sure Disney loves that, because I know they want... I think they have... Don't they have Star Wars films slated, like, into certainly our natural lifetimes, that we can be sure that up until the time we die, we will have Star Wars films, like, almost every year.
Right. Well, the real, you know, the real juggernaut is Marvel, which is also a Disney thing.
Which
right
is
now.
Also... Disney has all of the big things, yeah.
So Marvel is just wrapping up 26 movies that all tie together.
Oh, my goodness.
I guess the next Spider-Man, the Spider-Man sequel, is going to be the last movie in this huge arc with, you know, Iron Man and Tony Stark and this whole thing. And they're actually going to start a whole new arc. And there's going to be another 30 movies.
Huh.
I mean, they're just, that's, you know, our grandkids are just, I mean, there's going to be probably 1,000 Marvel movies by the time they're grown up.
Definitely. You know, this is something that I don't think has been completely well thought out also, but I have heard, you know, offhanded things like, you know, Marvel is kind of like the Bible stories of our time. Yeah. You know, it's like popular entertainment, sort of. Some of them are better at being kind of like morality tales than others, but all interlocking stories. It's interesting. But, you know, it would be awesome is if The Bachelor were somehow incorporated into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I would go, I would be more excited. I do see more of those films than, you know, than... There are some that I like. I sometimes think I'm a little more hard on them than I should be, because, you know, I like having fun and whatnot, but it is that feeling again of, like, sometimes these, I just feel like I'm being sold like a ticket to the next film, and not like I'm never getting to experience the present moment here, because it's always like paying off the last one, selling me a ticket to the next one. Where's the story?
Yeah, and they're also gummy. I mean, the only one I truly thought was good was Doctor Strange with Cumberbutt.
See, I still...
he's good at anything he does.
Yeah.
But that one wasn't really part of the normal universe, so, and it was really done kind of differently.
Yeah,
it looked wasn't really trippy. Dummy.
Yeah.
But I'm a DC guy, but even, it's like, DC's trying to create their own universe now, right? And it's like,
everything's
shot in that dark green matrix, like, there's no color.
It's the Zack Snyder-esque, you know what? And I'm going to get a little controversial for our 13 listeners, and I know they're all big Christopher Nolan fans, but Christopher Nolan is... You know, with his Dark Knight reboot with Batman movies, is like he lends a lot of the aesthetic, especially to that DC, to a lot of blockbuster franchises now, especially the DC stuff.
Well, Chris, I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan. Although you've heard me gripe about his turn to Dunkirk, I didn't like that move. But
I ended up seeing, and I was underwhelmed, Craig. So I don't know if you saw it, but I do not.
I don't think I'll be seeing it. Okay. I'm not really into like World War II movies. But the Dark Knight is considered one of the best movies of all time.
Right.
And
certainly
it's ranked number 5 on IMDb.
Exactly. The rabbit.
But I personally like Dark Knight Rises. I think...
Craig, we are in the minority again. I agree with you.
I think in terms of movies about what it means to be a flawed human and like what it means to be a person with needs and self, everyone has a certain ego and a certain self preservation and like wants to look out for themselves and what it means to help others in this crazy like world where there's so many, let me rephrase, what it means to be flawed living amongst a world of people who are flawed, have tendencies to want to help people, but at the same time understand that helping can be fleeting.
Yeah.
Like, I think if in that sense of movie, The Dark Knight Rises is perfect. Like, you cannot make a better movie about those themes.
Well, I will agree with you, and I think I understand what you're saying, in that The Dark Knight Rises is more of a full-blooded attempt to tell the kind of classic superhero story, right? Which I think deals with a lot of what you just outlined. And because Christopher Nolan sort of goes for that with, you know, he's just reckless and going for that. And it's a big, I haven't seen it since I saw it in the theater, but I kind of love that it's like, it's the big spectacle. It's that hero story. It's dealing with the themes that you outlined. That makes it kind of, that's kind of what I go for these superhero movies, is exactly that kind of thing. And I think Dark Knight Rises, people kind of associate that with Heath Ledger's performance, which is amazing, right? That is great. But I think the filmmaking isn't necessarily always as good because it's a little, I think a lot of people forget, like the end of that movie is a little bit of a mess. It's like setting up a million things. So in that respect, I'll agree.
Well, Dark Knight is more of a masculine, it's more like talking to the single male, and you know it's more like, it's like, you know, there's evil in the world and we can overcome that evil with, you know, lots of police force, you know, like I think all
that is how it ends. You're right.
The whole series is accused of being fascist filmmaking.
Well, like, I could totally see. You mean like Gotham City, like the whole Batman, not just, you know, Nolan, but
you know he's a protractor for the state power.
Yeah,
but you know, Dark Knight, the first Dark Knight is really like a straightforward like good versus evil, which is, you know, the male like Star Wars. You know, that's why they like Star Wars, because it's good versus evil. But Dark Knight Rises is a much more nuanced, like layered texture on like the flawed personalities and how they try to help each other while also like maintaining distance from each other.
It sounds like you've got a good read on this, Craig. That is
it's like, you know, 2001 Space Odyssey, Apocalypse Now, Dark Knight Rises.
Well, in general...
Well, Mulholland Drive. I'll put that on there,
too. You know, I don't know how you feel if you saw Interstellar, Christopher Nolan's film.
Oh, I really liked Interstellar.
Okay,
yeah.
Because that's another one. I know it really divided people, but that was probably one that I, out of his more recent films, I really liked quite a bit. Because I think when he goes for kind of actually like sentiment and just heart, you know... and lets go of these puzzles, these logic puzzles that I think sink some of his other films. He's a good filmmaker, yeah. Because you sort of are like, okay, he's exploring big ideas and putting them in this, whatever, like this very human kind of construct. And that's what Dark Knight Rises is for me as well. It's like Interstellar is very much about like, it could sound corny, but in the like grand scope of the film, it feels okay. Like that love connects people across time and, you know, it's, even though it's all pretty much fucked, it'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I think there's, you know, we could go on this whole thing about what it means to have an anarchist film, but
that
we're
I
almost to the end
to
of Bachelorette.
I know. Maybe
we're looking
podcast.
At the bloopers.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe we're at bloopers already. See, this is where I fell asleep last night.
The greatest bloopers in Bachelor history.
I Tickle Monster. I don't like him still. These hands don't help him. I think he was produced into doing that. It's like the guy with the doll. I don't remember who was the person who had that. Remember the doll that kept appearing?
It was Andy. Was it Andy? Andrew? Andy? I don't know.
But these hands are like some prop that a producer thought, we got to get this in here.
When did they go golfing? Was that a thing?
I don't remember.
I get to this point, not only in the show, but in our podcast where my brain turns to mush. I mean, it's an hour and 20 minutes here. So, but I'm willing to hang on. I'm willing to hang on to see if we can get the Bachelor in Paradise preview, which has to be coming up here any second.
Oh,
right?
Well.
Everyone's clapping.
We might be disappointed. Do they have that in the actual episode? I hope so.
Well,
you're right.
You watched it on the stream, right?
Well, I watched it through a live service that actually had ads and stuff, but I think that Chris Harrison teases a preview, so I think you're right that they do have it.
Just like paradise, knocking on heaven's door.
Is that the theme song?
It is. You'll love it. It's like, how could you have it? So, you know, I don't know if you watch Family Guy. I'm a big Family Guy fan. I don't know. There's moments where they cut to... Conway Twitty, is that his name? He's like a country folk singer, and this is like this old footage. And he's not funny. There's nothing funny about it, but they show him, they do a cutaway for like 5 minutes, playing an entire song, completely out of context. And Seth MacFarlane has said that he loves it because it's like, he's in complete power when it comes to his relationship with Fox.
Okay.
So, like, he can do anything he wants because Fox canceled the show, and then it became this huge phenomenon. They had to like crawl back to him and beg him to, you know, bring the show back. So that's he's on record saying, like, Conway Twitty's basically saying, we can do anything we want on television, so we're just going to show this thing that's completely unfunny and not interesting for 5 minutes on network primetime Sunday night television, you know, just to show that we can.
That's pretty good.
Me, Bachelor in Paradise is sort of like
the Conway Twitty
thing in that. Well, it's like you think about the button down, like you think about how much bureaucracy there are on networks, right?
Yeah.
And not only, I mean, the cable stations have their own bureaucracies, but it's nothing like, I'm sure, ABC and NBC and whatnot. I mean, these are huge.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Old money institutions that everything is tested. And to have a show like, to have greenlit a show where the producer is a known, you know, like, let's get people in a room with alcohol and see what they do. Like, to have that show on ABC, it's like, how could they, it's so different that I'm fascinated by Bachelor in Paradise because I think it's really, I love watching people get wasted and have crazy things happen. But it's also interesting to me as like a media studies kind of thing. It's like I hope that scholars, pop studies scholars, like write about it so it doesn't get forgotten about in the future.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm always worried that Howard Stern, who was, like, you know, the greatest radio media person ever, is just, you know, they, we won't know who he is in 100 years because no scholars are, don't want to write about him because he's taboo, right? No scholar wants to put out a book on Howard Stern because they want to get tenure, right? Even though, like, you can't talk about radio and satellite media and censorship without Howard Stern.
Right.
It's like, I'm worried that, like, Bachelor in Paradise is going
to... going to be forgotten.
Not the same juggernaut as Howard Stern. It's just going to get forgotten about because, it's like, no one wants to write about it. But to, for a network to put out a show like Bachelor in Paradise, to me, is important.
Well, Craig, this is why I'm so excited, because this is my first season, and I've heard that it's crazy, and I'm interested in all of those, you know, elements you brought up, but it's gonna be sweet. And just on, you know, on the base level of being a you know, a really feral person, I can't wait.
I don't know what feral means, but it's
you funny. Know, I'm just crazy, you know. Well, you know, I could seem a certain way. I probably, if you met me in real life, right, anyone listening, I'm a mild-mannered, you know, dweeb, but, you know, like, I think most people on the inside, it's you're right. Just a feral, primal kind of person.
And got it.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Got it.
Well, it's going to be awesome.
On that note, we're getting kind of like what is the setup for next episode here.
The finale, by the way.
The finale, correct. And here's your Peter.
Possibly. Hey, I already put it forward. This is my pick for next Bachelor. We'll see if that turns out to be correct.
I think if I had to predict how the finale is going to go, I think they're going to get rid of Pierre pretty close to the beginning.
And then they'll get rid of Eric after that.
Well, I think they'll get rid of Peter. Like, I think they're going to come back. They're going to solve the cliffhanger. She's just going to cut him. And they're just going to kind of wipe the slate clean there.
Yeah.
And then they're going to focus on the Eric versus Brian drama. Now, see, in the past, there's been a lot of conflict. Like, the two guys didn't like each other, and they had to stay in the same hotel. There's been a lot of that in the past, but I don't get that from Brian and Eric. Like, there's no conflict. So they don't have fodder there to really ham up. So... I don't know, but I think they gotta, like, go... I think they're all gonna see each other again one more time, and, like, she'll go out with Eric, and she'll go out with Brian, and then they'll do this whole thing where she mopes around, and then they're gonna do a rose ceremony.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm totally wrong. What they do is they hang you on till the end, and then it's whoever flies in on the helicopter, right?
Well...
Like, you don't know who it's gonna be until she brings in the first guy... That's who she cuts, and then the second guy comes in, and that's who wins.
Let's see, the last season was Nick. How did he pick Vanessa? Do you remember how that very last episode went?
Right, well, it was like they were there, and then he brought in Raven, and then Raven... They always have the girl say some very awkward, like, she has to go first and say how much she loves him, and then he's like, sorry... I don't feel the same way. And then they bring in...
Oh, I do remember that.
And then
that.
With JoJo, like, the same thing. It was like they helicoptered in a swimmer guy.
Oh, yeah, Robbie.
And then she cut him. I mean, it's just the same pattern. So we're gonna have to contend with Eric and Brian throughout the whole 2 hours.
Right.
Which is why I think they're going to get rid of Peter, like, right away.
Peter, he sunk himself. Obviously, he, like, broke up with her last time. So I think you're right.
Okay, we're still waiting... For
where's that? I'm seeing her cry quite a bit. It's like the drama of the finale. You've got to tune in to see why is she crying. But then she's born anew.
She doesn't want to cut somebody that she cares about so much.
Craig, quick pitch for you.
Yes.
All right. You know that we've started to have people who have grown up with The Bachelor and Bachelorette watch the show and they're on the show.
Yes.
We have to continue this to a nursing home. I want The Bachelor, like, if Chris Harrison lives to be, like, he's got to be in his 90s, bring this to, like, a place where people are in their 70s and maybe recently widowed or whatever, and I would watch that. If you were like 50 or 60, right, wouldn't you watch that, tune in? Or if you were yourself 70 or 80, come on, it's like the next step.
Geriatric bachelor?
I think it could work as people like grow old. It's like the same thing. I think nursing homes will have to have video games and stuff. You know, it's going
right.
to, we're going to reconceptualize what it means to be.
Well, that's a good point, because like old people right now are sort of like in the Jimmy Fallon is as far as we'll go kind of area, right?
Right.
Like, the old people are baby boomers, so they're kind of like, they knew they had Elvis and the Beatles, so they're cool with like Jimmy Fallon doing more crazy stuff. But you're right, in like 40 years, the old people are going to be like us, Generation Y, and the millennials.
Yeah.
And we're going to want reality geriatric.
And you're going to want to see your age group represented or whatever. Yeah. It would be well, on that awesome. Note,
we did not get the Bachelor in Paradise preview on this broadcast through streaming service.
Unfortunately.
I'm done. My stream is over.
Me too.
I'm getting a Dark Tower preview.
I'm getting a Toyota preview, which was the car that I had that was recently stolen. If you were about to buy this episode, not brought to you by Prius, which is valuable in the black market. Be careful. Buyer beware.
Did your insurance company purchase you another Prius?
You know, I don't mind getting into this on air, Craig, but my car was found by the police over the weekend.
No kidding. Let's talk about that off air. I really want to hear about that.
Absolutely. But listeners, buyer beware. Brought to you by Blue Apron.
And in a pitch for the LA Metro, for those of us that don't drive, got to put that in. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Chris, this is our longest episode ever. I thought it was going to be our shortest episode ever.
Oh, dear.
Let's hope that we retained and gained more listeners than we lost.
Absolutely. And back soon for the finale and for our Facebook page. I'm Bachelor in Paradise.
You got it. Alrighty. We're the Batch Masters. Twitter @BachelorMasters. See ya next week.
Bye.